those who have finished whatever aspect of the course that they're studying. And so it's the Srila Prabhupada in the 60s, then he envisioned this program of having a systematic study of his books, going through the Bhagavad Gita, Nectar, Devotion, Ishvapanishad, Upadeshamrita as the fundamental course, the basis, because all the instructions are given in these books. Then Bhagavatam expands that out, gives more elaboration, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita, then that gives the how the Gaudiyas themselves apply these teachings that are there in the Gita, Nectar, Devotion, and the Bhagavatam. And this is based on the course structure given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this concept of this formalized education or formalized degrees then was for the idea that devotees then would appreciate that endeavor by the Vaishnavas, how they applied themselves into understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And then the idea is, having learned these things, then they'll be practiced in one's life. So the Vaishnava concept, these aren't something that are connected with the social status. Like in the modern, it's more of a social status. It's connected more with the vocational side or occupational side of one's life. So in Varna and Ashram, today degrees are connected with Varna. But in the Vedic sense, they're connected with Ashram. Because they mean that they are a development or an application of one's, you know, intelligence, one's energy, one's time into uplifting oneself by the proper study of the scriptures. Because even in the Vedic sense, then the study of scriptures, even if it might be used connected with an occupation, it still had to be based on the qualities that they had gained through the ashram. They weren't, you know, like the modern degrees, it's just some skill. No, it meant a body of knowledge that one understood and was able to practice in one's life. Right? So it was just the application of one's own personal endeavor in a specific area. Right? So the endeavor is the same, that commitment is the same, just the area might be different. Right. So of all the bodies of knowledge, then knowledge in the philosophy, in the theology, that's always considered the highest. So in the Vedic, the Paravidya is the highest. Like that, after that's the Aparavidya and the various, you know, aspects of Vedic knowledge that connect with the techniques of dealing with the material energy in connection with the Lord. And we see even in the Western, you know, its foundation, then someone after doing his, trivia and quadrivia, they would get their bachelor's, which was just considered that you were a gentleman. Then the actual study was then after that you became a doctor, a lawyer, or, theology. So of the three, the theology was considered the highest. Though the time spent to study them, I think the standard was 12 years, then that was considered the same. So in that way, they were all, you know, professors. But just to, that theology has that higher element that it's dealing beyond the material, then those who had that were called doctors. And those who had law and medicine were called masters. But they meant the same thing. But it was just to give that, you know, respect for the, that higher principle. You know, later that's become, formalized by the Bologna University, which is in the West considered the first university. And so then they made it where it's bachelor's, master's, and doctor's, you know, as a progression rather than just the doctor and the master's were on the same level as like other, most other universities. They would have the bachelor and then they would have a licentiate, which means he had a license now to practice this, teach this, take students. So then Prabhupada, for here in Mayapur, means he gave the general Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav like this for the whole movement, but in Mayapur, he was specifically talking about these degrees connected with the school in Mayapur, like that, letter to Tamal Krishnamars, a letter to Bhavananda Prabhu, both of these, then they were mentioned. And so, based on that line, then we are studying. So it's the then the study of Prabhupada's books in both the how he mentions in the way of going through the study in Siriyatam, means just going from the beginning to the end of the book, and then after that studying thematically in elucidatory, where you then study the different topics that are there all together, right? Because when you're introducing something in a discussion, you'll introduce how much someone can understand now, and then afterwards, as they learn more, then you can give something more, something more. So everything goes up together. So you have to study it in that order. To gain an understanding, to be able to approach it and to understand it. Then having now studied that whole topic, then one can study it in the elucidatory fashion, where now you go back and everything about one topic is all seen together, rather than in stages. Because when you apply something, you don't apply it in stages, you apply it together. But you have to learn it in stages. That's why you have to have both systems of learning. Right, so that's the Vedic system. So that's our method. So using both those together, then that gives one the academy degrees. So, yes. So then in here, then these, because we're doing the academic study of it, we're going through and that, trying to get the understanding, proper attitude. Then we do that, then we understand the theology very nicely. So therefore, then, it's a theology degree. You may notice that those who grow up in the ashram itself, they do the same degrees, but because they also have the ashram training, they go through also that other aspect, the Bhaktivedanta Vidyashrama. So they're trained in all the ashram sides, or the practical sides of applying these things in their life. So, because they do both of those, they do the academic and this, then their application, they get the divinity degrees. So, as far as the study and everything, it's exactly the same. Like that. So, we would like to, thank everyone for taking part, endeavoring, applying themselves, you know, having patience with the process. You know, we're on the seventh year now, but many have been involved, you know, since I think now about 10 years. Is it 11 years? So it was running 4 years before we formalized the courses like that. And so we'd like to thank everyone for taking part. Okay, so here we'll go back to.
We have seven here. Three of the villages are present, and they're giving ascending order.
Okay, so going up. Okay. This means this person is here? Or?
No.
Okay, so the first one we have is Diploma of Theology for Vigatashu Das. Like that? Then we have Diploma of Theology Cum Laude for Haladar Nikai Das. Okay. Is that one right here? So these in the, we've added just for Sahota Maharshi, he wanted to have that, those who in their writings and that, then they show a good, solid level, consistent level focus and all that, then that is recognized. So then using the Latin, that's basically a universal term, so you have the cum laude, means that it's for that extra endeavor that's gone in. So he gave, that's why he was, sometimes you have the double things or other things you can do so you can actually get more credit, or just the quality of the writings and all that, then they get like that. Mm-hmm. So that's been here. Okay. Then we have for advanced diploma of theology. So the diploma of theology means the first year. Bhagavad Gita, Nectar, Devotion, Ishu, Upanishad, Upadeshamrita. The advanced diploma means the second, where then they're studying the analysis of Bhagavad Gita. And the analysis, Nectar, Devotion, Ishu, Upanishad, Upadeshamrita. So in that advanced diploma of theology, cum laude, we have Sulalita Devi Dasi. Then, in Bachelor of Theology, we have Kasya Das, not here. Okay. Then we have Bachelor of Theology for Padmamukhi Devi Dasi. Okay. Just so I use the paper, I don't want to make sure I'm giving two or three away.
That's extra.
Honor. Extra honor. You get two. Okay. Then Master of Theology for Devarshi Das. And then a final one, Master of Theology for Jugala Priti Devi Das. Yeah. Okay.
Theology Prabhu. Theology Prabhu.
Theology Prabhu. Oh, Master. Yes, yes. Theology Prabhu. Now you can say, yes, now I'm a master. so I guess instead of mothers or masters, it should say, masters or doctors. Okay, so we're sorry that Vedic Academy, there's not as much, pomp and all that, in the West. I don't know how they got into it. Maybe it's from the Masons, that they have a hat that's flat, like what they put mortar on to build things. Otherwise, why else would they use a mortar board for like that? But we just thought that in India, they don't use the mortar board. They use that little shallow karai and all that with the gumshoe on the head. So we didn't think that that would look so good, putting on the gumshoe and that, and everyone coming forward and taking their things. And yeah, so we just thought we'd just leave it as it is. Okay, so we'd like to thank everyone for this.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes.
Okay, we're all inspired to learn from our preaching.
Well, that's because it's Prabhupada's system. It's handed down. So it's because in the Vedic system, it's always recognition of the position, like you see Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's known as Mahamahopadhyaya. Mm-hmm. Like this, different. These titles are Baladev Vidya Bhushana, like this. So it's a standard tradition in the Vedic, and also accepted by the Gaudiyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur formalized it. So he had so many degrees in various areas and different Vaishnavas. So they like to say anything.
Just wanted to thank Maharaj. Specifically, I think as Antadrut Prabhu said, but formally on behalf of Bhaktivedanta Academy and on behalf of ISKCON Mayapur, this is a very wonderful opportunity for the devotees to come and hear Shastra Yoni Bhat, as you have taught here. In spiritual life, everything begins from the Shastra. There is no access to transcendental life without the teachings of the Shastras, and here specifically teachings of Srila Prabhupada, which are very suitable for the conditioned souls of this age. I had a little discussion the other day with some devotees coming from the West, and we were discussing different areas of ISKCON. And some temples, they have it very easy. compared to Mayapur, because they have there's one guru and there is everybody is a disciple of the particular guru, and well, things function very easily. In Mayapur we have so much diversity, so that advantage of that bringing that unified vision and like that is a little bit more difficult to accomplish. So after that discussion, and I was contemplating it, and I thought, actually, it's not true. We have one guru, Srila Prabhupada. He's the acharya for all of us. Yes. And we are very fortunate that we can have Srila Prabhupada's association through Maharaj's teaching. So we're all very grateful. And as Maharaj said, very, very wonderful. Prabhupada said, my only complaint is that my disciples don't study my books. So at least in this assembly, he wouldn't have that complaint. Everybody is doing it, so that's very, very nice. It's an austerity, as Maharaj pointed out, studying of the scripture. Mind does not like to surrender to the Shabda Bhuman, but somehow by your grace, you are able to get a little bit of taste and a little bit of determination to continue with our studies. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, Maharaj, it is, as Maharaj mentioned, it's not very easy always to absorb your mind in Shastra. Mm. But somehow, there are some personalities in our movement which are actually able to attract the minds of the devotees. And they, somehow or other, by Prabhupada's kripa, they are able to make this message very attractive. And this is a great gift. And you are one of the foremost of these personalities. And we're very grateful and very fortunate to have you, because otherwise we don't have so much taste, actually, for Shastra. But, because you have this taste, and the way you present Shastri is very tasteful and very pleasing for the heart and for the soul. And this is your great contribution and your mercy. Thank you very much.
Sadhu, sadhu.
Yes.
I just wanted to thank all the Vaishnavas, and especially Bhakti Purna Maharaj, because for me, study is not my strong point, and it was always difficult, any kind of study. But in this Sangha, since we came to Mayapur 2009, we attend, or tried to attend, and it's actually very easy. And yesterday we discussed with Burijan Prabhu that study of Bhagavatam, it's a pleasure in itself. So this is my personal experience of this Sangha. It's very easy, it's very tasty, it's full of rasa. But we have, all we have to do is, Masai mentioned, the austerity, the only austerity I feel is that I have to drag myself to the sun. Then everything happens automatically. it's not a difficult thing to be here, but just, you know, just to
get it
somehow like that. So thank you very much, Maharaj, for the Vaishnava. Thank you.
Want to say anything?
Yeah, just thank you, of course. And my only prayer is that we can continue, finish the course, and then start again, because Prabhu can rewrite the study guides, make them better and better. So please bless us that we can continue, because hopefully by this one day we will attain Krishna prema. Oh. Maybe it's too ambitious.
Set your goals high.
At least this you can do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. Okay.
Anyone else?
I just really want to thank you for this opportunity to study here. And it's just a great honor to be here and to participate in your studies and under your guidance, Maharaj. And I just feel very fortunate that we're all here. And we just pray to, by your mercy, to absorb more and more in studies and to be able to further share it with others, and thus to engage in the preaching mission of which I am, by your mercy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I only come once a year, and I take advantage of being here in my airport to attend the lectures. But in between, I keep listening to the lectures back in Beijing. I try to catch up as often as the lectures are uploaded, and I listen to all the lectures. It brings me to my airport every single time. It gives me the association of the devotees and people I love.
Sure.
But I get to learn a lot also, and it makes me, because I do my own bio and study side by side.
Oh. It
complements everything.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We love you too.
Thinking that some of us have had the disadvantage of being, how you say, impregnated by secular education, especially in the West, and the brainwashing that goes on throughout those years, then coming here, it actually takes a huge mental adjustment to actually understand what real learning is. You actually have to. Maharaj mentioned one time that was a school in Switzerland that taught music, and it would charge you twice if you had already learned music from someone else, because you actually had to unlearn everything before you were ready to learn. So I've realized that over the years of coming here, learning Maharaj for something like 15 years now, that true study of Prabhupada's books can only be done through association of devotees. Studying Prabhupada's books individually, it can happen, but you can generally tend to mislead yourself. But in association with devotees, and especially those who have the taste and the understanding of Prabhupada's vision, then one can actually really understand the need of the acharya, and therefore the need of everyone who should follow in that line. So you know that over the years, Maharaj's humility is such that he's never taken any credit for himself in this, and he's constantly, continually, despite so many impediments, despite so many challenges, continuing to render this service to the Prabhupada. And without such service, then we would all be bereft, and the entire society of the world would be bereft. On my side, personally, I'd like to thank you for actually teaching me how to become a devotee.
Professor?
I will speak something. Because my Guru Dev left quite earlier, so actually I didn't have much opportunity to hear from him. But after I hear attend Maharaj class and hearing from you, so it cleared many of my doubts and misunderstanding, and helped me to understand depths of Vedic culture and the authentic of our Vaishnavism scripture, and also helped me to have a deep understanding of my own tradition, the Chinese tradition. So, and also I appreciate very much the application and realization side of Maharaj's lecture, which is very rare to get. So, this course really gave me a light to my devotional service and devotional life. So, thanks again, Maharaj, for your kind instruction and association.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Nithai go.
I'm wondering whether we should have a policy of also charging double for those who already have other degrees.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that might be good. For those who ask too many questions. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you come preliminary, and then after watching for a few weeks, depending on what kind of questions one asks, then one's charged accordingly.
Give them the deluxe package.
Yes. Yes.
Something to consider.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so continuing Canto 9, Chapter 19, page 55. Srila Prabhupada comments, to go to the forest and live there with the animals, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the only means by which to give up lusty desires. Right, so this means you, one's going to end up living with animals. It's just a matter of whether it's the ones in the natural jungle or in the cement jungle, like that. But the ones living with the ones in the natural jungle, then we can give up one's material desires because you can meditate on the Lord. You go to the cement jungle, generally they have so many distractions that you generally only increase the lusty desires. Right? Unless one gives up such desires, one's mind cannot be freed from material contamination. Right? Because the mind is what's going to, how you say, identify everything. It means senses are going to bring in information. Then according to that, you are going to interpret that information. Right? So everybody's mind has its own hermeneutics on how it looks at the world. So if it's looking at it from a contaminated point of view, then simply we continue that contamination process. Right? Working under the modes. So when the mind gives up this material contamination, then the interpretation then will be according to the higher principles. Right? And then by that, then one will be able to absorb oneself in Krishna consciousness. But otherwise, the mind will have another idea of what to do with this information it's gained and how to use it for some kind of speculation or sense gratification. So that's why then it's very important, this concept that the human being accepts that the real principle of human life is to give up sense gratification and come to the platform of pure devotional service. Then, according to one's particular conditioning, one chooses a position within the Varnashram system that best suits the engagement of their needs. Does that make sense? Then one can move forward. So many times it's taken, oh, the Varnashram, that's such a high level thing and this and that, or it's so unnecessary, you know, because we're just being practical. But the whole point is why would this come up? Why is this vision there? One is, of course, not understanding it or not knowing it or not seeing it practically applied. So then that's a natural position. As long as it's just based on one doesn't know. But if one takes a philosophical position of its unimportance, then one hasn't actually understood the real philosophy, which is the Bhagavad Dharma, and that one's trying to become a pure devotee. That's the real purpose of human life. And if that's the purpose, then the question comes down to this. Okay, if I'm supposed to be always engaged in God, means how am I going to get to that platform of God consciousness? So then Krishna says you have to always be engaged in God consciousness, to be God conscious. Right? It's not an occasional thing that you do. Right? By making that endeavor to always be, then Krishna will reciprocate by giving one the ability. So then if I'm God conscious at all times, now think about it. If I'm taking every moment, so then how do I get out of bed? What do I do with the bed after I've gotten out of the bed if I'm God conscious? I'm going to step on the floor. Is there any considerations? Right? Then I'm going to go to the bathroom. Are there considerations in using the toilet, brushing my teeth, taking a shower? Then afterwards, in dressing, in decorating with tilak. You know, then going to the temple, chanting japa, seeing the deities. Right? How am I going to sit? How am I going to walk? How am I going to talk when I interact with people? I have to eat. How that's going to go on. right? I have family. How do I deal with the family? I have an occupation. How do I deal in that point? I have a community in which I function. How do I deal? What's my position? Does this make sense? So, now the question comes up, is there any answer to any of these questions when we're dealing with the modern contemporary environment? Maybe a little bit for community, if you have one, from the Hindu community, Jewish community, some other community, you know, like that. You're a hippie on a farm, like that. Okay, but that's rare. So what will you do, since the principle is God consciousness, and therefore I'm supposed to be God conscious at every moment? How do I deal with all those? How do I answer that? That only then we can see the support is just the details are in the Varnashram system, within the Pancharatrik system. So that's what we apply. So it's not something that's lofty and above. It's actually just the basic kind of practical support. Everyone says practical. This is the practical. And generally if you check what most say is practical, if you actually analyze it, how is it practical in God consciousness? How does it make you God conscious? How does it support your God consciousness? Right? It may, yes, work in your service. But the point is how does it work for you? You've got your service done. Okay, then great. But then you always have to be doing service. And fine, you're at the temple, you're doing something there, some arrangements, some management, some preaching, some puja. That will work fine. Now that's going to be great. So that means the brahmacharis, the sannyasis, they can use this system. Right? Then the only problem is that means then grihasthas, what are they going to do at home? How do they deal with the home environment and all that that goes along with it? Because in being practical, does it deal with that? Means I'm being practical in my devotional service. I'm just getting the work done. I'm getting it managed and it's happening. Devotees are Krishna conscious. Preaching is going on. Programs are happening. Prasad's happening and being served. Like that. You can say, okay, yes, that is practical. And you can say, as even if you don't understand the mechanics, it's connected to Krishna, it's getting you your results. But once you go home, then how will this practical work? You can't just say, because I'm a devotee, naturally everything I do is perfect. Yeah. Does that make sense? So then where will it work? This is where it falls apart. And then the point is we're talking about someone who's all the time at the temple, most of the time at the temple, or at least every morning, you know, from 4 to 9 at the temple. And then what do you do with the rest of the day? The other 20 hours. So that's when we see is that this so-called being practical isn't actually that practical if we're talking about God consciousness. We're just talking about management or organization. Yes, it does work when we're doing that. But for other things, then, you know, because that organization of what we're doing is connected to Krishna. But it's because it's connected, we're managing, so that's it's a support. But when you go home, where's the Krishna consciousness? How does that management now, can we can say it's Krishna conscious? Because it's not necessarily supporting Krishna consciousness. I organize the house, I manage, I get my taxes paid, my mortgage paid, you know, I pick the kids up from school, I got them to the dentist. But where's the Krishna consciousness? So it's not a matter of, oh, this is some lofty idea. No, this is just, it's like breathing. You don't breathe, then you can say, I'm just being practical, so I'm not breathing, right? You know. But it's that has to be done. So it's actually just a supportive, it's a secondary aspect. It's not a lofty thing. It's just a practical thing. But because modern practicalness only has to deal with the economic value of something. Simply an accomplishment of something. It doesn't deal with the God-conscious content. And how much do you apply it outside of your occupation? So, how in your life, what are you going to do? There is nothing. No one deals with it. There are no books on it. In fact, basically most all religions don't even touch it. And if they do, then people think, you know, that's a bit over the top. So then that means we have to be comfortable with part of the day God conscious and most of the day not. And hopefully the part of the day God conscious will overpower the most of the day that's not. So therefore then, Krishna and the Acharyas, they give the Vedic system by which every aspect of your life is dealt with. So you can see how to connect everything to Krishna. Everything's connected to the Shastra, either through the culture, through the, you know, the philosophy. So what's connected with the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, the body, you know, the social, the family, the individual, the family, the community, the nation, you know, how we fit in the universe. It's all dealt with there very nicely. But it's not meant as its own system. As Krishna points out, is that religion engaged in his service, that's a value. But practicing Varnashram without its understanding connection to Krishna, what's the point? It's nice, it's better. You'll have humans at least, but humans that are wasting their time. So it has to be, you're following that in connection with Krishna. But actually being God conscious, that's the purpose of it. The purpose always has to be, how will this make me God conscious? Right? You know, someone's saying, oh, well, you know, I just want to do this. We're Westerners. Why do we have to do all this? Okay, then be your Westerner. What are you going to wear? Right? You know, basically it's going to come down to what you like. How is that going to make you more God conscious? Right? Because what you like, is that the likings of the soul? No, it's the likings of conditioning. So then being the likings of conditioning, how is that purifying to the soul? We're encouraging the likings of the conditioning. How that's going to make me more God conscious? No, but we follow some rules. And that, what are these rules? Right? Who made the rules? Okay, brown shoes, brown belt. Right? Black shoes, black belt. Who's following that? First of all. Second of all, then who made that? What's it for? Right? So it's there. Okay, it's aesthetics. It looks nice. It has that aspect. What's the point of looking nice? Social prestige. And what is that social prestige going to get you? You know, the main discussion of this chapter. You know, what the, you know, Mr. He-Goat and Mrs. She-Goat are into. That's the purpose. Right? Or at least then, working in the business, the people take you seriously, so then you'll make profit. So in other words, it's purely on the platform of economics and sense gratification. So artha and kama. That's it. It doesn't get above that. Yeah. Pranamoyal, that's on a good day. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. So like that. But Varnashram starts with dharma, with manomoy. That's the reason you're doing it. So it's already a higher level. And the purpose of following that is for anandamoy, to please the Lord. It means you can use it for lower levels, but it's actually not supposed to be. Right? So just like, does that make sense? So that's the thing. Bhakti is how it's supposed to be used. So this is not a sentiment. It's not archaic. It's not all the things that people will say to avoid using it. Like that. If you want to be honest, just simply say, I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable with it. Okay, we accept that. But try to make a philosophy trying to prove how we're not behaving badly, then that's not so good. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Therefore, if one is at all interested in being freed from the bondage of repeated birth, death, old age, and disease, after a certain age, one must go to the forest. Pancha sordvamvana vrajet. After 50 years of age, one should voluntarily give up family life and go to the forest. Yeah, so it's a matter of you have to at one point just decide, you know, that's it. Because one has tried every angle. That's what mental concoction is, or mental speculation, is we've used our intelligence to the best of our ability, tried every angle to control and enjoy, and it hasn't worked out. So at some point we just have to voluntarily give it up. Yes.
I just caught up with the last point you made.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned that Varnashram without being that conscious is no point.
Yes.
But then the Devi Varnashram allows all the different members of the Varnashram to
yes.
within their activities. So
yes.
what makes them Krishna conscious during the day that makes them members of being Devi Varnashram?
Because it means you're a member of Varnashram if you follow the rules that apply to every aspect of your life, whatever you're doing, because Shastra says. So then you're pious. That will, if you're doing that for the benefit of the piety, that will get you to the heavenly planets. If you're doing that activity for the benefit that will get without attachment to the results, that will get you liberation. But if you're doing those activities because it's there in Shastra is given by Krishna, so this is how Krishna likes it done, so to please Krishna, I'm following this. That will get you bhakti. So that means be brushing your teeth, but that, you know, why are you doing that? Keeping the cleanliness because it pleases Krishna. Because you're supposed to brush your teeth. You brush your teeth because Sanatana Goswami quotes scripture that's what you're supposed to do. Rather than just, you know, in third grade, then all the, you know, all those, movies that we had to show how you're supposed to brush your teeth and all those bacteria coming, bad guys attacking your teeth and all that. That's not the reason that we're brushing our teeth. We're brushing because Sanatana Goswami said to. Right? So that brings it in line with remembering the acharyas, brings it in line with those things. And then you can see is, yes, those things go on. And then, depending, that may, these different aspects may or may not remind you of the Lord's different qualities and pastimes and everything, but at least there's that connection that is to please Him. So on the platform of just the foundational, you know, on the platform of jnana, then we're pleasing Him. Then in the activities, then on Kriya, we're pleasing Him. But ultimately, we're trying to do it to please Him on Icha, on His desire.
So if you have your 5 hours in the morning, then you have to go to work, and then in your mind you're thinking, I have to go to work because I've got to raise a family, but I also give money to the temple or for projects. Is that bhakti?
Yes, that will be. But you could say is you could improve that because you've taken what money's given to the temple in that. But the point is, why are you maintaining your family? You know, it was more fun than keeping a parakeet or, you know, hamsters squeak too much. And, you know, it's also really weird, right? You know, they start walking with their front feet and don't move the back feet. They just start getting longer. And then they stop and then the front feet stop and the back feet walk and then they catch up. You know, it's kind of like a slinky or something, you know. It's like, so you just thought family would be much less freaky or something. You understand? So, are we raising them to be Krishna conscious? Are we creating an environment for them to be Krishna conscious? So then that gives that element. Then, why is that there? Why is it, you know, we say, oh, you got to get a job, as if that's a modern thing. Did the modern culture create the concept of occupation? Create the concept of economy? Did they? Or no? Means before the European, I mean, okay, let's say we go back in, you know, some thousands of years. Okay, so European economy would be going out and catching yourself a boar, right? Okay, and then if before you caught the boar, you were careful to watch, then you could see where the truffles were also. So you catch the boar and you have truffles. So now depending upon who you are, you know, you keep the truffles, sell the boar, or, you know, sell the truffles, keep the boar, or, you know, whatever you like to do. But basically that concept that they create it. You understand? The West can't claim they've created economic, it was already there. It's an eternal law. So the reason that you have to have a job to get money to maintain yourself is because that's how God arranged it. So I'm doing this because this is the way the Lord said. That's Varna and Ashram. Ashram is your life. So Varna maintains your ashram. Like that. So then that's it. Then how you do that? How is the house set up? What are the considerations in the house? Why are those considerations there? Someone likes a clean house. cleanliness is Krishna, right? Someone likes an aesthetic house, that aesthetics are Krishna. Someone likes, you know, orderly house, you know, that's Krishna. Because all those things are his, so one can see Krishna in everything. But it's the more you understand. So in other words, generally the parts in Bhagavatam and Gita that most people don't have the time for because they're too busy being practical are the very exactly ones that they need to keep themselves busy. Well, they say the brahmacharis and all that, you know, a little bit more, it's, you know, they can have the time to do that. But in one sense, they don't require as much because everything they do, the temple commander tells them what to do, so it's all service for the temple, whether they're God-conscious or not. But when you're dealing with grihastha life, you're God-conscious, it is God-conscious. You're not God-conscious, it is just mundane. Well, the brahmachari can be totally mundane, but because he's scrubbing the floor in the temple, it's Krishna. He's getting the spiritual benefit. So that's the point, is the technicalities are actually meant for grihasthas. Like that. And the simple part, that's for the brahmacharis and all that. But generally it's all taken the other way around. Like that. And so, yeah. Set.
So, Maharaj, we see that, that in the history some great Vaishnavas, like Tukaram, you know, he didn't care of any family affairs and just engaging devotional service.
Tukaram?
Yeah.
Okay.
So how can we understand this?
But did he deal with his nice wife properly? Did he interact nicely according to etiquettes and stuff like that?
Yes.
What about his children?
Yes.
What about his community?
He tried to help them, but since the...
No. But no, that you're talking about just preaching to them in Krishna consciousness. That, of course, that's the most important of all things. But did he deal nicely? As a man, did he deal properly with women, with children, with elders, with the community? As a husband, did he deal properly with his wife, as a parent, with his child, as a student, with his teacher? Did he follow all those etiquettes?
Yeah.
Okay. So, then it's not a matter he's neglecting, because that's the ashram. All it is that on the Varna side, he's living that style of depending upon the Lord. Whatever the Lord sends, that's how they're going to live. In other words, their life is all about just being God conscious, so whatever facilities they get, that's what they'll use. Does that make sense? So that's Amrita. So not so many people live by that method. Sudama Vipra is there, Tukarama is there, there's the Python Sadhu. So it's a bona fide occupation. It's actually called an occupation.
It's an occupation.
Because he's not lazy. Is he sitting there on the couch, you know, that's got that dip, permanent dip in it, because he's been sitting there all the time, the thing kind of needs to be reupholstered, even better, taken out in the backyard and burned, you know? And the only muscle that's worked in his body is the one on his thumb from pushing the remote. Right? Excuse me. And then his other hand for calling up for, you know, the takeout. You know? Yeah, he does get in some walking. He does walk to the front door to get the takeout. He does walk to the fridge to get a drink. And he does walk to the toilet. So, yeah, okay. Other than that, is that what he's doing?
No.
No, he's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So he's just taking the ashram and making that as his total life, which you can do. Brahmacharis are doing that. Vanaprastha sannyasas are doing that. So grihasthas can do that if they just want to live at that point. Brahmachari doesn't have a job, but he eats every day. Why? Because he's doing service. So you can live like that. The original grihasthas, they live like that.
So he is beyond the vana.
Basically, but they'll still function within, because as a grihastha, if he was alone, then he would be, yes, like that, like a paramahamsa. But as a grihastha, then he's following all the duties of ashram dharma. Just the maintenance of that, he's depending upon the Lord. Because technically, you do your work, but the results that will come are dependent upon the Lord anyway. So if you depend upon the Lord and just do devotional activities, then that same result can come. It's coming from the Lord anyway. But, so the difficulty is that ability to not worry about it. You don't see him in anxiety and thinking, when will I get money, or things like that. You understand? So that means he's beyond. So that's harder than having a job. Because a job, you think, I'm the doer, I'm doing this job, I'm getting the money, I'm maintaining my family, I'm doing my job, you know, my duty. So it's actually, even though in the modern it's taken as a higher level, it's actually not. So the difference is they're mistaking it for that it's a mode of ignorance, they're lazy. But actually it's they're in pure goodness, so they're beyond passion and ignorance. Does that make sense? So how many people can do that? So it's not your standard recommendation. That's why you see Sukracharya. He made the point of glorifying unchavrita, you know, which going out collecting grains and stuff that nobody wants. Because you're active, you're making the endeavor, but you're doing something that doesn't bother anybody else. But Amrita is even above that. But it's not your standard recommendation. So it's one of the six occupations, but it's not given as your main recommendation. The highest is considered Rita, you know. But this Amrita is actually higher, but it's outside the system. So in that way, it's not exactly higher. Because when you say higher, we're giving a status to it. This is without status. It's just beyond.
What means Amrita?
Not just depending upon the Lord.
Oh, yeah.
That's Amrita. You know, like brahmacharis. They do their work and they depend upon the Lord for their bucket of halava. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
You mentioned that in the temple, even if the brahmachari is not Krishna conscious, then still he's doing the devotional service.
Yes.
So if a grihastha has deities in the house, then is that the same?
No, because then whose house is it? If you're forgetting the Lord, whose house is it?
If you forget the Lord, then one thinks, oh, this is my house.
Yes. So that means you're vacuuming the rug, not thinking of the deities. You're just thinking of how you got to get this together because the other ladies are coming over tonight. And, you know, if it's not, you know, just perfect, then this one's going to complain about this, that one about that. And that's such a trip and all the time and all things like that. You understand? Yes, so that's the thing. It's Krishna's house because they're coming to Krishna's place. That's why you have to keep it nice. So being Krishna's house, that's why you have to keep it clean. Because people come over to the house, so Krishna's guests. That's the difference. Even if the brahmachari thinks this is my place, is it? No. But if the grihastha thinks it's my place, what's to keep it from being that? That's what we're saying. The direct, whether you're conscious or not, you get the devotional benefit. But the indirect, only when you're conscious do you get the benefit. Right? So now, of course, light is more powerful than darkness. But, so therefore, even if one is just attending the morning program, doing these different activities, then that's still strong. He'll advance. But how much more if one would add the indirect? Because sometimes those indirect, if you deal with them not properly, they can be so overwhelming that you might even forget about the direct. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the brahmachari sleeps in, you're in maya. The grihastha sleeps in, he's just being practical. How does this work? You know, it's just, I had a long day at work, and you know, I had this and that at night, and so many things. You understand? So that's the difference, that's because of that sense of ownership. So that's the point. The brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas, they've given up that social responsibility of ownership. That's the difference. Because otherwise, well, hey, they're doing that, I can do that, we're all the same. But that's not actually representative. It's a matter of ownership or non-ownership. That's the whole thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
There's a couple of things that constantly come up that would be weaknesses in these discussions. One is the constant look for exceptions and the other is to constantly look for reassurance, either reassuring yourself that your thinking is correct, or even in accepting a thinking, trying to get reassurance from someone else to see if that's accurate. So are they weaknesses of faith, or are they weaknesses of understanding, or are they just a mixture of
it? It would be both, because faith means a realization. So if the understanding's not there, how will you realize? So that's the first thing. What was that other day we were saying? Prabhupada was talking about faith. He was connecting it with something else.
Respect.
That's the interesting point, is that faith and respect are the same thing. It means it manifests as faith, but it's because of respect. You respect Krishna, therefore you have faith. So if there's no respect, like this modern thing of not having, it's considered more elevated, more intellectual if you don't have respect. But then that means you won't have faith. And that's why then the Vedic culture, what Prabhupada says and all this becomes points of questioning. Is this actually correct? Should we be using this as a preaching mission? We try to cover up our lack of respect and faith by making it look intellectual. Oh, but you know, if we approach like this and that, wouldn't it be better to do something else and like this and that? But the point is we're just trying to get the acceptance of the non-devotees. We're not looking at, will the non-devotee become a devotee? Does that make sense? That's not the consideration. It's just, we will be accepted and won't be disturbed. So I won't feel bad that I'm in a lesser position, because the karmis will say I'm okay. So I have the, you know, their authority is then, you know, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we've already accepted that you're okay. Now they want to know that, am I okay? Right? But the point is, that's going to be governed by the modes. It's going to change. It's not going to stay the same. Today they'll like, tomorrow they won't. You know? Like that, just in a moment. You know, it's like, what was it, it's in America? One day, the whole country, yes, you know, war with, what was it, Afghanistan? Yeah, like that. Everybody's into it. Then when they moved it over to the next country, then it was like everybody against it. Same thing, same guys. You know what I'm saying? Just in a moment it changes. So that's the modes of nature. So why would we want to put our faith and acceptance and respect in the modes of nature? Like that. So when we respect the authority of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we'll have faith. But if we don't have, if we have authority issues, we may have faith in certain areas, but other areas would be very weak. The difficulty is if we try to apply ourselves into those areas of weakness, we can't guarantee that the result will be God-conscious. Right? So, in that, then, it's yes, the Shastras do address this, that we have material desire, and we want to be able, be comfortable, that we can function in that capacity. So then we're also looking for that confirmation that that's all right. I'm a grihastha, that's all right. You know, I'm engaged in sense gratification, that's all right. You know, I'm making money, that's all right. And so every time it comes up that it looks like it's talking about that this is not good, sense gratification, we have to give up. Oh, no, but is that, but I'm a grihastha. So, yes, it's all right, but it's only all right connected to Krishna. So if you don't connect it to, so we're looking for it. No, is it all right on its own? No, it's never all right on its own. But connected to Krishna, then it has a value. So what's the value? Is its connectability to Krishna. And so since it's connecting to Krishna, that's it. We already have the sense gratification, right? We already have the Western food, Western dress, Western lifestyle. We don't have to confirm that it's connected to us. It's pretty obvious. Just ask the guy next to you or look in a mirror. You know, if you feel, well, the senses are imperfect, so I'm looking in a mirror, I can't actually tell. It looks like I'm, you know, dressed as a Westerner, but am I really? So you can ask the guy next to you. Right? And if he doesn't look at you weird like you're nuts and walk off, then, you know, so better ask someone you know. Then they could give you, you know, you wouldn't freak them out. You know what I'm saying? So the point is connecting to Krishna. So yoga means connecting to Krishna. So the connection to Krishna, that means it should be connected to Krishna. And so how do we connect to Krishna? Do we want to connect to Krishna on what level? On a speculative level or on reality? So the Bhagavatam says how he is Brahman, how he is Paramatma, and how he is Bhagavan. We have to connect there. Right? So it has to be ultimately for his, and if you want devotion, it has to be for his pleasure. Otherwise, if you just want to be elevated and purified, just connecting Brahman and Paramatma will work. But if you actually want to develop love for Krishna, then you have to have that aspect of him as a person. So he is a person. He has his likes and dislikes. So we're saying, no, but he's God and I have this attachment. He can understand. He doesn't care about these things. He doesn't care as Paramatma or as Brahman. But if you're going to be in a relationship on Bhagavan, then he's a person. Then why wouldn't he care about you as a person? So in other words, that simply is a Freudian slip on the parts of these individuals that actually they don't care about anybody. Because if God doesn't care, you know, he doesn't care about these things. So that means I don't care about what other people do if it doesn't affect me. You know what I'm saying? So instead of it being, no, we're just being personal and, you know, individual and all that. No, we're being impersonal. Personal means it's actually about the person. So that's why it's hard to understand, because the Vedas will talk about the engaging the senses on the personal platform. But the point is you as a person have to commit to it. We just want to fit in. Everybody's doing it, so if I do it, then it's cool. And if they're not doing it, I don't want to do it. So what has it got to do with the individual? So it's not an individualistic philosophy. It's just, you know, how you say? You know, it's how you say?
It's not a philosophy.
Sorry?
It's not a philosophy.
Yeah, at best it gets up to the lemming level. Right? Yes?
So we see practically to connect everything mechanically
yes.
to the mind,
yes.
as yogis do.
Yes.
Patanjali explain all those details.
Yes, yes.
It's very tiring for the mind.
Yes, yes.
But we are not on a spontaneous level yet. So we caught in between.
Yes.
And that's why devotees have difficulties in their sadhana.
Yes.
So what would be the...
Is try to think that I'm doing, even these mechanical things are being done to please Krishna. Because Krishna's there, that's why it becomes easy. The yogis, the jnanis, the karmis, they have it very tough because they have to do it all themselves. I mean, of course, the Lord is there, but they're not making that effort beyond just what benefit they'll get. So just like anything, you want more, you work harder. You know, you want the, you know, two-seater compact, that costs this much. You want the four-seater with four doors, that costs more. You work more. But if you're working with Krishna, then you simply make that endeavor and the results come. So when we want to always be able to remember Krishna, and we make that endeavor, then Krishna will reciprocate by allowing that, by giving us that. Because he's knowledge, he's remembrance, he's forgetfulness. So we're thinking, no, Kavi is knowledge. You know, no, it's not. It's Krishna's knowledge.
Would it be correct in saying, just from that you work on that which you notice first, and then you work on everything else?
Yes, yes. It means that's why Krishna says what you value. Because even if, let's say in a day, there's hundreds of activities that are going on, but some of them fit into activities that are of value. You know, like you're saying, let's say it was cleanliness is the value. So one may not notice other aspects, but everything connected with cleanliness, that you can be aware of because it's a value anyway, so it won't be any, difficulty for the mind. Like that. So that's why Krishna says, what you value, know that is him. Like that. That's the point. So we start from our values. So then that's why you'll see, let's say, somebody who is new to Krishna consciousness and impressed with, you know, Krishna conscious. So they'll go home, follow their regular program, but they're so happy because they just remember about that little bit of Krishna conscious that is the value to them. Although everything else they're doing in the day is all useless. But because they're remembering Krishna, then they're getting that transcendental benefit. So that's the whole point, is that you target what is of value. So those are the areas where you put that effort. And the other areas, don't worry about. Those areas, oh, that's too much. Don't worry about those. But what is, like that.
Because I was just thinking that what's value for me, and then I see Krishna there, this is still Paramatma level. This is not Bhagavan level yet.
But when you're doing that to please Krishna, that's when it goes to Bhagavan. So that's the thing. We get, means we're working on just under the modes, just with false identity. Then one comes to the understanding how Krishna, his energies pervade everything. That's why mechanically it works. Then he is Paramatma, is there sanctioning, witnessing, and sanctioning everything. So in this way, then we can see up to these levels. So one is there, but then the point is why is Krishna doing that? Because he is Bhagavan, wants to see the living entity come back to him. So he is taking up these positions just to, so that we can associate. Like that. So, yeah. Okay, after 50 years of age, one should voluntarily give up family life and go to the forest. So family life here means the responsibility of family life. That doesn't mean that one doesn't interact with the family, the husband and wife aren't together. It means that this idea of the responsibility of family life, that I'm trying to improve my material condition, in that consider, that's given up. Because that's actually the hard part. The husband and wife not living together, that's actually easier. The hard part is giving up the responsibility. Your kid's grown up. Leave him alone. Let him do his own life. You can advise him. Tell him, my experience, this is good, that's good, and that's not good, that's not good. But the point is, the thing is now what he does, that's his call. You have no control. You can try to control, but you don't have control. So why not just recognize you don't have control and take the, you know, the high road? You know, be dignified. Does that make sense? That's the hard part. That, so it's not, you know, moving out of the house, going to the forest, you know, like that, you know, just eating, you know, whatever you pick up, you know, off, you know, the fully ripened fruit off the trees and stuff like that. That, you know, that's the.
So it's an internal battle.
It's the internal. That's the tough. The external is just it makes it a little easier, because if you're living out in the forest, then you don't have to worry if they shampooed the rug or not. Right? You know, not that you won't think about it, but the point is it makes it a little less relevant, you know, because you're sitting there waiting for that fruit to ripen on the tree, and it'll be ripe tomorrow, but then today afternoon the kids find the tree and they don't care if it's ripe. They like the sourness, you know? And so then you come back tomorrow and no fruit on the tree. So you have more important things to worry about than getting the rug shampooed. Yes.
Right. You generally talk about these four phases. Whenever you get like some bad news, or first you go into denial, then you get into anger, then you go into depression, and then finally you get into acceptance, and then somehow or other it goes around in cycles. So
yes.
How do you kind of strive off against just acceptance, almost like?
But what's denial? See, because when you put it into these, somebody sat, saw this for a long time, then sat and thought about it for a long time, because the person who came up with those four, guaranteed they came up with something with about 25 elements first, and all this and that, and this one, this, and it made a lot of sense to them. Anyone they told it to, they thought he was crazy. So he thinks, and then eventually he comes up with these four very clear. And that, you know, and then we think, oh, that's complete in itself. He can still explain all 25 points. Right? And so we catch the four. How many people understand the rest of it? Right? So the whole point is it's observing what's already there. So what's denial? I mean, if something's there and we deny it, it's there, what does that mean? Atheistic?
Thomas.
Ignorance, right? So that's ignorance. Due to ignorance, then what are we denying? that it didn't work out according to my plan. What's my plan for? My senses. And then when senses are not taken care of, what's the next stage? Frustration and anger. So it's that shloka from the Gita. And if you follow one, then you go down. And after you've gone down and wallowed around for a while, it gets annoying down there, you know, because it means how long can you wear the tracksuit? How long can you go without washing your hair? After a while, it just even gets to you, right? So then at some point, you know, then you have to, you know, take a bath and do all that stuff. Right? Then it's a matter of, okay, this is reality, so acceptance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's because it's so funny because we joke about these things, like we joke about the grandparents and we joke about, and it's almost like everyone just accepts that this is the way it is, but no one actually thinks about changing it to what it should be. So it's almost like you've just accepted.
That's the point. We accept our conditioning. But Krishna consciousness means we accept that our conditioning exists and we accept that it can be engaged in the Lord's service. But we also accept that the conditioning itself won't make us happy. So trying to encourage and develop that is what's the point. So that it comes down to it is that how do you connect it to yourself? We make, as we said before, we make that thing. We've seen, okay, I'm dressed, I eat, I do all these things, not as a devotee, but as how just the karmis around me that I value dress. But the point is I want to connect that to Krishna. But the connection is to Krishna. Is it on Krishna's terms or it's on my terms? So have I connected it to Krishna or have they connected Krishna to me? And so if I've connected it to me, then we're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. You know, how much connection is there? But if I connect to Krishna, he's unlimited. It works very nicely the other way. So you can do it that reverse way. As a beginning, that's called attached neophyte. That's called Sakam Karma Yoga. You know, seriously mixed devotional service, Aropya City that I project on him. I like eating this. Krishna must like it. I like eating this. It's so good. And I'm, you know, of course, the most expert and knowledgeable in the world. So this is so perfect. So therefore, Krishna must like this. You know what I'm saying? So that is really, 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 really neophyte. But as we progress and we give that up and you move to Nishkam, then you can appreciate that actually I'm connecting myself to Krishna. So therefore it's according to Krishna's likes, Krishna's thing. What does Krishna want to eat? What does Krishna want to do? Then it's progressed. So it's progressed. You can start at that phase. But to say that that phase is equal to the other phase, that would be like saying, you know, nursery school, I say language arts, you know, is the same as the guys, you know, the professor who's writing his own books, or that the numbers that they learn is that level of what they're doing, and that is exactly the same as what the quantum physicists are doing. You know, so that's the whole thing. And but how many kids are doing that in the world? Millions. How many quantum physicists are there? Right? Some thousands, tens of thousands. So then you can say, "Is no, but see, this is more prominent. This is what the mass is doing. This is, you know, what everybody's doing. We want to make it accessible." But the point is they won't progress unless you understand what the physicist is doing. That's math. So if we don't accept what pure devotees are doing, what the acharyas are recommending, what the great devotees are doing, and devotees who are dedicated to following that, and we don't see them as superior. In other words, if there's no respect, then there will not be faith. Because like this, as long as you have a friend who also is attached to his own conditioning, and then the two of you get together and talk about how this third person is not appreciative of that, you have community. Okay? What happens with when you get rid of that guy and it's only the two of you? What do you have in common? Because the only thing in common was complaining about the third guy. So once the third guy's gone, then what? You know? Just like in, you know, we gave the example. You have a bunch of warring tribes, you know, in the mountains. Then, you know, what is it? The big bear comes down south, saunters down south, walks into the midst of them. They all get together, fight the bear. And then once the bear leaves, then they all go back to fighting with each other.
It's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes, but once the enemy is gone, that your that person you call friend is no longer friend. It's a political alliance. It's not spiritual. It's not it doesn't have anything. So that's the whole point. That's why it's not recommended. Okay, we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.